We begin, unfortunately, with some sad news. On Thursday, Chapel Hill saw not one but two serious collisions between drivers and bikers or pedestrians. One of those was fatal. The first happened on campus as a UNC student on a bicycle was hit by a dump truck near the intersection of Cameron Avenue and Pittsburgh Street. That student was hospitalized. No word on their condition. Later that night, 61-year-old Thomas Filter was struck and killed by a driver as he was walking on MLK Boulevard near Perkins Drive. Police say the driver in that case will likely not face charges. No word on any charges in the other collision. Chapel Hill saw 192 vehicle crashes involving bicyclists or pedestrians between 2017 and 2021. Five of those crashes were fatal. Chapel Hill police are also investigating reports of gunshots in the Northside neighborhood just before 5:30 yesterday afternoon on Caldwell Street near the intersection of Mitchell Lane. No injuries reported, but contact Chapel Hill police if you have any information. State-level news, the Republican Party filed a lawsuit on Friday in an effort to block the State Board of Elections from pushing back the deadline for absentee ballots to be received. State law says absentee ballots have to be received by the Friday after Election Day. This year, that is November 11th, that's Veterans Day. So Board of Elections Director Karen Brinson Bell issued an order moving the deadline back to the following Monday, November 14th. The next day, offices are open, but the GOP says she doesn't have that authority. That lawsuit was filed in Wake County Court. Now we head to Washington, where a flurry of bills recently passed in Congress, including the sprawling Inflation Reduction Act. We recently spoke with U.S. House Democrat David Price about the latest action. 97.9 The Hill's Sam Burmese-Dawes breaks it down.
Price's final session of Congress might be among his busiest. The congressman represents much of the Triangle area and announced last October he would be retiring at the end of his session after more than 30 years in office. In the current session, Price helped pass major Democratic Party policy goals on issues like gun control and climate change. Most recently, Democrats were able to pass the Inflation Reduction Act on August 12th after many months of debate in the House and Senate. The IRA is a cornerstone of Democratic President Joe Biden's economic agenda. The wide-ranging legislation seeks to fight inflation, invest in domestic energy production, and cut emissions by 40% by 2030. The legislation also tackles health care, allowing Medicare to negotiate for prescription drug prices while extending the Affordable Care Act program through 2025. Opponents in the Republican Party said the bill needlessly increases spending and will make inflation worse, or at best, have no effect. But Congressman Price said helping Americans save on health care costs will make a big difference for the wallets of working people.
And there's no question that when you look at what people are paying for health care, especially, this is going to reduce their costs and therefore reduce inflation.
He called the legislation a significant achievement and highlighted large investments in incentives for Americans to cut emissions in their homes and vehicles. It was a close vote in the House that sent the legislation to Biden's desk for his signature. No Republicans in the House or Senate voted for the bill. Price said polarization in the House and a GOP increasingly unwilling to come to the negotiation table are part of why Congress has been so mired in gridlock lately.
There's a kind of diehard element in the Republican Party, which sometimes dominates the party in the House, which still holds out on these things. But we've had enough Republican support, particularly in the Senate, to overcome the filibuster and to get these things done.
The filibuster, a Senate rule that requires the majority to have 60 or more votes to pass legislation, continues to be an obstacle to action in Congress, Price said. While they've had success in recent months, he foresees gridlock over upcoming legislative efforts, like the 2023 fiscal appropriations bills.
But right now, that has to be chalked up as an uncertainty and still a casualty, I'd say, of congressional polarization.
Locally, Price said, the IRA's investment in chip technology could make a big splash in our area.
We stand to gain a whole lot by having the revitalization of the chip business in the U.S. and the revitalization of scientific research. We look to be big winners. North Carolina State, other North Carolina institutions have punched above their weight in clean energy research.
The IRA's health care provisions could also make a big difference for Orange County, Price said, as lawmakers seek to bring drug prices under control. Voters in House District 4 decide who will fill Price's seat in Congress in the upcoming November 8th general election, where Democrat Valerie Fucci faces Republican Courtney Giles. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Sam Burmistaz.
Over now to Jackson, Mississippi, whose residents finally got their water pressure back a week ago after losing it when floods hit a water treatment plant. Environmental advocates say we may be likely to see more situations like that in the future. Ashley Ward is a senior policy associate at Duke University's Nicholas Institute for Environmental Policy, and she spoke last week with 97.9 The Hill.
I mean, what we're looking at in that instance is historic underinvestment in a community, structural racism, along with a climate disaster. There are likely thousands and thousands of communities like Jackson across the United States. And what's happening, unfortunately, the way our system is currently designed is investing in upgrading what needs to happen. The money's not there. The programs are not there to do so. It's one of the things that's so wonderful about BRIC with FEMA, because it was actually designed to do this, right? BRIC is one of the first pre-disaster funding programs that would help communities, you know, prepare for something before a disaster happens. That's unique. It just started in 2020. And so you have communities like this one all over the country who are in a situation where they don't have the revenue base to make the upgrades that are needed. And then you have an extreme weather event that happens, like the flooding there. Now, of course, they're able to get a disaster declaration from the president, which will mean money will go flow toward that city in order to hopefully repair what needs to be repaired. But the question ultimately is, should we be waiting until a disaster happens to direct funds toward these communities so that they can actually have viable, safe drinking water? We have to make the investments that are needed in order to prepare ourselves for the extreme weather events that are coming.
That's Ashley Ward there. Get the full conversation in the News on the Hill section of our website, chapelboro.com. Bit closer to home, congrats to Jordan Matthews High School in Siler City, part of the Chatham County Schools. Last week, Jordan Matthews was selected to be the first high school in North Carolina to stage a production of the new musical Frozen. School officials say the curtain will likely go up sometime next fall. And in Chapel Hill, good news for downtown drivers. Town officials say the West Franklin Street repaving project is finally set to end this week. Last step is adding paint on the new bike lanes. They're taking care of that in the next couple days. Visit our website, chapelboro.com, for more local news, including a story on expanded broadband in Chatham County from the News and Record, plus photos from inside Chapel Hill's first ever cookout location, which opened Friday on Elliott Road. Time now for sports, brought to you this hour by Town Hall Burger and Beer. UNC football team stayed unbeaten Saturday, struggling on defense again, but holding on for their second straight road win, 35-28 over Georgia State. With your recap of that one, here's 97.9 The Hill's Michael Coe.
In the minutes following UNC's 35-28 win at Georgia State Saturday afternoon, Carolina fans could be forgiven for feeling a tad frustrated. They'd just seen their Tar Heels blow yet another double-digit lead and then hang on for dear life against a seemingly inferior opponent. But after college football descended into anarchy and madness the rest of the day, that win feels awfully good. Carolina, now 3-0 on the young season, now sports two road wins against Sun Belt foes. Normally, this would be scoffed at in the college football world. Now, the Sun Belt is flexing its muscles after perhaps the greatest opening 2 weeks in the conference's history. Last week, it was Old Dominion pulling a home upset against Virginia Tech in Norfolk. This week, App State and Marshall traveled into the bellies of the beasts and shocked top 10 foes Texas A&M and Notre Dame. After UNC put up 63 points against the Mountaineers in Boone, the Aggies managed just 14. At times, it looked like the Tar Heels would fall victim to the Sun Belt curse against Georgia State, letting a 21-3 second quarter lead turn into a 28-21 deficit. Fortunately for Carolina, two fourth quarter touchdown runs from freshman Omarion Hampton and four consecutive stops by the much maligned defense turned the screws down the stretch, icing away the victory. UNC head coach Mac Brown said the performance was a positive example of his mantra of teachable moments.
We call it teachable moments, and it is. We will have a lot of video for them tomorrow to say, this is what we're talking about now. You won the game. You won the game because you made these four stops in a row after turnovers and forced punts, and that's what we're talking about.
That's not to say the win was perfect. As has seemingly become commonplace, the Tar Heels were hell-bent on keeping the Panthers in the game. Two late drives in the fourth quarter, which could have sealed the win, ended in a punt and a fumble. Some of Brown's decision-making was questioned after the game, but the head coach remained happy with the win. Unbeknownst to him, deep in the hallways of Center Park Credit Union Stadium, the Aggies and Fighting Irish were taking on water. It makes Brown's next quote all the more prescient.
People are going to be critical if you're 3-0 or 0-3, so it doesn't matter. Like I said last week, people are going to be critical, you're going to be critical, and I don't care. These are good kids, and they're trying really hard. We've got a lot of things we need to fix, but when the offense wasn't as good, a lot of people like to have 35 points today if they didn't think their offense played great and you turned it over three times.
Both the offense and defense were decidedly up and down, and while that marked a step back for the offense, it marked a giant leap forward for the defense. The four straight stops down the stretch were the most all season by the unit. It's a major confidence boost heading into UNC's first of two bye weeks this season, but Brown still sees room for improvement.
We've got to correct so many things. I don't know how many big plays we gave up, not like last week, but we did have the two big passing plays that really hurt us, or three. So we've got to continue to try to figure out what's happening back there with communication and just work to get better.
After the bye, Notre Dame comes to Keenan Stadium. It's a stark contrast. One team comes in licking its wounds after a shocking loss to a Sun Belt team. The other comes in 3-0 with two suddenly impressive road wins. Before the season, which would you have thought were the Irish, and which the Tar Heels? North Carolina, 2022 Sun Belt champions. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Michael Coe.
Also the only team in the country with two road wins so far. No game this weekend for UNC. Again, they're back in action next Saturday hosting that Notre Dame game. It was a busy weekend all around for UNC sports, not just football, but the second-ranked UNC women's soccer team also got a win on Sunday, giving up an early goal but rallying to beat Central Florida 2-1. Avery Patterson had the game winner in the second half. Tar Heel men's soccer lost their ACC opener on Friday 1-0 at the hands of 10th-ranked Pitt. They're back in action tomorrow, hosting East Tennessee State. Second-ranked UNC field hockey was in California this weekend for the first time since 1989. Successful trip. They beat Cal 7-0 on Friday and Stanford 6-0 on Sunday. And UNC volleyball beat Michigan State, but then lost to Michigan in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Turning to high school football, Chapel Hill stayed unbeaten with a 49-7 win over Carrboro on Friday. East Chapel Hill stayed winless with a 40-0 loss to Bartlett Yancey, but Orange got their first win of the season, 49-0 over Granville Central. In Chatham County, Northwood beat Seaforth 12-7. Seaforth still looking for their first win as well. And in baseball, the Durham Bulls lost to Scranton last night, 14-2. Bulls lost 4 of 6 to the Rail Riders over the week, but they're still in first place by a game and a half. They're back in action tomorrow on the road at Gwinnett.